Welcome back to the Hockey House Pod, episode 146, presented by our friends at Selly Hockey Co. I'm your host, Mackenzie Murphy, as we bring you the latest news from the start of the ACHA and AAU college hockey season. I'm joined alongside by the full crew tonight. We got Fitzy in the house, Collins, and our executive producer, David Herman. Herm, I'll throw it over to you really quickly here, because I think you and I were going back and forth today. Kind of a weird start to the season so far, because I feel like last year we kind of got hit with it all at once, and then it feels like this September things are a little more spread out.
I think it's different this year because we kicked off last season with that road trip down to Embry-Riddle, and that really set the tone for the season. We don't have a ton of tour stops in the immediate future for September, October, so I think that's really why I'm feeling a little bit different about it. We went down there, we experienced the crowds, hell of a game between Embry-Riddle and Florida, and we'll get to those teams a little bit later in the podcast. You couldn't ask for a better start to the season than that.
If Labor Day being the first weekend, being like September 1st, 2nd, 3rd, that's like a little too early for teams to start, where last year, you know, it was September 8th and 9th was Labor Day weekend. Maybe teams have a little more flexibility in scheduling games for that weekend to start off the year. But not to say it was a slow weekend, but maybe not as many headlines as we thought going into this episode, but certainly some exciting things to talk about. But I'll throw it over to our guy Colin Fitzgerald. Fitzy, how's it going? I mean, big retirement post this week. It was officially official. Heck of a job on the video edit. The best reaction I got from that was my 13-year-old brother swiping up on Instagram and being like, dang, I didn't realize how good Fitzy was.
Well, that means a lot. I appreciate that. Yeah, it was cool to see a lot of people reach out. And I don't know, it was kind of like a final thing that I felt like I needed to put together personally to kind of just wrap it up and put a bow on all of it and, you know, help me kind of move on to whatever's next for me here. But I won another championship recently. We clinched the men's league chipper for the summer league. That was fun. Not much going on. Just hanging out, having fun.
One door closes and the next one opens. My men's league team, actually, we started our first game of the winter season was last night. So we had a couple weeks off in between there, and looking forward to getting rolling on that. Some new faces, some old faces leaving, but very not excited for the 9:50 start time in the winter season. We were lucky with an 8:30 start time all summer long. Switching to the 9:50 is a bit of a grind. I feel like it's been a long day since I rolled out of bed this morning. We'll throw it over to our guy, Aiden Collins. Collins, how are things going?
Still waiting for things to kick into gear and for my offer letter to come in. And within the next couple weeks or by early October, I'll be in New York, getting situated there. So, but yeah, right now just kind of enjoying my final moments of freedom before running the corporate rat race, I guess.
Well, speaking of New York, we'll throw it over to David Herman. Herm, you gave me the inside analysis on the opening weekend right off the jump here, but anything new you up to?
No, not a ton other than one more milli plus TikTok that we got under the belt. Thank you, Tristan Jarry, and your goalie goal. That makes two Pittsburgh Penguin mill plus TikToks. So gonna keep going back to that. Well,
there we go. Good content week for the kid. Fun weekend for me. I had my friends come down from North Conway and we kind of broke in my new apartment. And I think it was the realization that I may have spent too much time with Tim Kalinowski in my time at Syracuse University and maybe traveling on the road last season, because I went to a Red Sox game and it wasn't the same old Red Sox game that I remember going to as a kid. You know, I was grumpy because the beer lines were really long, the seats were uncomfortable, we were like right on top of each other, and I was just like thinking in my head and I was like, man, Tim has poisoned my brain because I'm at a Red Sox game and I'm grumpy about it. You know, we made the most of it. We had a good time going to the bars before and after the game. I remember the first time Tim told me that he hated going to Fenway Park, and I couldn't even believe how somebody would ever even think that. And you know, it whatever 110-year-old stadium at this point, so it's got its quirks, but I mean, you'd think the Fenway Sports Group would have it figured out by now on how to shorten those beer lines. The boys were really lacking in that department this weekend, but it was a fun one. Got to have the guys come down, spend the night at the apartment, did a youth hockey clinic on Saturday. They're kind of revamping how cross ice mites works in New Hampshire now, so I went to go with a team I helped coach last season, do all that, and got to run into ACHA legend Bobby Rodrigue, who is preparing for his first season behind the bench at the NCAA level with Keene State. The Keene State guys were there helping out as well, so a couple of ACHA ties there. But Herm, I see you throwing your hand up, and I know you're going to have a rebuttal to my Fenway comments.
just a skill issue. Get celiac disease and you don't have to worry about the beer lines. It's all good. Don't worry about it.
Don't have to miss the three Red Sox home runs in line for beer. But we did have some exciting action, and honestly, it kicked off in Fayetteville, Arkansas, where Arkansas kicked off a thrilling weekend of non-NCAA college hockey by welcoming in new SEC rival Oklahoma to town. It was actually their first game as an M2 program, and the Razorbacks defeated M1 Oklahoma 3-2 in overtime on Thursday night to kind of kick off the weekend. Sooners tied the game with 3 minutes to play, salvage a point, if you want to call it that, in the ACHA. And then the Razorbacks went on to win in overtime. And then on Friday night, an absolute thriller here. Herm, should I throw it over to you? Because were you watching this one live?
I did. That was the crazy thing, was I pulled up YouTube and I was like, oh, cool, they're playing the second game, let me tune in. And I watched all of this happen. It was unbelievable. Oklahoma takes the lead with 39 seconds to play, and the commentator, I don't remember his name, has this unbelievable line, which is, and the Sooners are going to win this one 5-4. I don't think I've ever heard a broadcaster say that with 39 seconds to go in a hockey game. That is an eternity on the ice. And Arkansas comes down and ties the game with 8 seconds to play in the third period. He gets on the mic, no effing way. The Razorback players hitting the dab. He's going into the Jones Center crowd, and then they get the win in overtime. It was surreal to watch live.
Yeah, and it was funny. Herm and I were going back and forth afterwards because it feels like that place is rocking every year to start off the year. And maybe that's a place we go to kick off a season in the future, because I'm thinking back to last year. It was about around January, though, when Mizzou and Arkansas faced off, and that was a big game. And I remember the crowd for that one was really good. You know, two SEC schools, both M3 at the time, getting ready to move up to M2. And just, I mean, they packed that place week in and week out. And so I'm sure everybody got up for Oklahoma coming to town. And you know, Oklahoma played a really good M2 team there, and Arkansas basically a coin flip away from moving on to nationals last year. They tie Lawrence Tech in the final minutes of that game, and they don't move on at nationals. Lawrence Tech goes on to win the national championship. And so the Razorbacks are a very good team, and they're going to make a lot of noise in M2. So getting off on the right step there. Before we get into more of the weekend action, there was a decent amount of teams that revealed their championship rings from last season. I thought it was fitting that we got a follow-up message from one of the IU guys, because Fitzy, I know, was asking, like, I wonder if they're fundraising for these championship rings, or if they coming out of pocket. I know we can confirm the Indiana boys paid out of pocket for their championship rings, $250 a piece, pretty on par with what we fundraised when I was in high school for our state championship rings. So that checks out. I would imagine most teams are in a similar ballpark, but I mean, after taking a look at some of these other ones, South Carolina unveiled their AAU college hockey Division I national championship rings. It says the Cox and Script on the front with national champions around the rims. Florida went all out with theirs. They got the traditional Florida Gator logo on the front. I believe they had the names and numbers on one side, and then the other side actually has the AAU national championship trophy and the SECHG trophy, which they won the week after the national championship. And then I want to give the boys at Lehigh a shout out. They won the ECHA playoff championship, and they also got rings for that occasion, marking the first conference title in school history since 1942 in hockey. So a very worthy shout out for those fellows. But ringing in the new season with championship rings, and the Cox continued to ring in the new season on Friday and Saturday night, sweeping UNC and claiming ownership of the Carolinas, a 4-2 win on Friday night and a 5-4 victory on Saturday. Collins, I want to get your take on this, because I think for a while now we've been wondering, you know, how good is AAU Division I? South Carolina coming off the national championship, they play a UNC team that has been knocking on the doors for a couple of years, hasn't made the jump to the national tournament yet, but very big test for USC on opening night, and they take care of business against UNC.
Pretty big for AAU and the Cox in particular. I mean, some of the highlights, the toe drag, outweighing the goalie. But yeah, really excited to kind of see what the Cox can do, and, you know, see if they can repeat.
And so they'll be dual rostered this year. So they get the ACHA victory over UNC this upcoming weekend. We'll get it to it in games of the week, but they'll play Georgia, and that'll be an AAU game. So they'll kind of flip-flop each weekend. But NC State slams the door on High Point, a big welcome to the league moment. They take care of business, defeating the Panthers 8-2. High Point is another one of those dual rostered teams in the ACHA, M2, and AAU college hockey. A 8-2 win in front of a packed house. Saw the band was there for the Ice Pack 2. Love seeing that crowd there. That was another one where, you know, you're kind of just used to that barn being packed for opening night every weekend now. Another packed house, though, came for the Iron Cup. Almost 1,000 fans in attendance. Alabama defeats Auburn. Saw a news outlet in Alabama reporting this was the 24th consecutive time that Alabama has defeated Auburn in the Iron Cup. I'm assuming that means when the ACHA team plays the Auburn team, because now with Bama having multiple teams, I know they play Auburn as well, and I think Auburn has beaten that team before, so we'll have to get the details on that one. But you want to talk about another packed crowd on opening night, go down to Lexington, Kentucky, where it was this time Colorado's football team should be the one taking notes here, because the Buffs backed up their talk ahead of time and they shut out the Cats on opening night. We've talked about it before. That is a crazy place to play, but the fans can get antsy there. And so I'm sure they were antsy after being shut out 2-0. You could see the roar from the crowd on the first goal of the game on Saturday. They go on to win 7-1, a big blowout win, bounce back victory for the Cats. It comes off of a hat trick from Nick Delaney, so I want to make sure we gave a shout out to him. Speaking of spoiling the party, the Florida Gators did that as well. They went into Daytona with a 7-3 victory, followed it up with a sweep with a 6-3 victory the next night. So that's the kind of the highlights from the weekend. Again, not a lot of action. Again, you notice that's a lot of action in the Southeast region. So I'm sure there's going to be a couple more teams in the Northeast and the Midwest picking up the season this weekend, and a couple of Western teams too. We'll get to that in the game of the week, but lots of new jerseys this week, so we kind of want to dive into that one. Wanted to lead off with an interesting one here. New home and road set for the boys at Mizzou. Was curious about the logo change, because I know Herm was a big fan of the Missouri script on the front of the jerseys that they went with. So I reached out to a friend of the pod, Tanner Richardson, one of the goalies for Mizzou, and I was wondering, I was like, hey, like, did you guys get approval to use the Athletics logo and that's why you guys got new jerseys now? And he said it's actually not the official University of Missouri Athletics logo. The official Athletics logo is the tiger head with the oval around it. That is what you will see on the Mizzou football helmets and all over the Athletics pages. The logo we are using is permitted by our strict club sports guidelines. It just has to be used in the correct application. The script logo that we had used prior to this season was actually created by myself. And the reason we used that logo is because the club sports guidelines were not laid out in a manner in which we felt comfortable using the tiger head logo on the front of the jerseys. But he mentioned that the move to Division II, they wanted to kind of establish themselves as the University of Missouri. And they thought they would be more recognizable to have the tiger head on the front of the jerseys, something that they also went with on the front for the third jerseys that they revealed last year. But I thought it was really cool, you know, getting a peek behind the curtain, because, you know, maybe this is something we see eventually with NC State or a South Carolina, where we're so used to these schools not using their university branding that it almost looks weird when they start using the official university branding. But Collins, I'm curious what your take on this is.
I mean, first off, that's one of the best jersey reveal videos I've seen in a long time. That's really creative and really unique with the camera perspective, looking up out of the bag as the guys are throwing, and then the cut there was really, really good. I got to say, I loved those old jerseys, and I'm not knocking these. These are really, really great. But the one thing I wish they continued, the like super subtle tiger print. Like, that was classic, very Mizzou hockey, kind of a staple. But yeah, I mean, these things are still really, really great looking, and not necessarily as like taking this as a knock on the old jerseys, but they look more official, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, Herm, are you keeping your fingers crossed that maybe we get an alternate down the road here with the old Missouri script?
That'd be sick. I'd really, really love to see that. One of my favorite jerseys in my closet right now is the Hockey House Mizzou jersey that we've got.
Tennessee's D3 team released new jerseys for the upcoming season. I thought this was an interesting one as well. We want to talk about branding at universities. The Division III team, they don't use any black on their jerseys, which I think, you know, separates them from the other team. But they got the classic Vols script on the front. Very good jersey reveal here as well. And then I liked Auburn. Auburn unveiled their first third jersey in program history. It was designed by Kimmy Sellers, who's on the team. This is the Auburn women's team. They debuted a retro-inspired navy third jersey. It was requested by our players that the nameplate rests on the bottom of the jerseys just underneath the numbers, similar to what the PWHL did last year. Feels like it's kind of giving off like an early 2000s retro vibe here. Made me think of, you know, starter jackets and maybe like what you would see a replica jersey, like what that starter would sell back in the 90s, 2000s. So I really liked that one. Thought they did a good job. You had York College go in dark mode with a new black jersey, green trim. And then I think this one knocked it out of the park in terms of jersey reveals. But Northern Arizona, they come out with a home and road set featuring the NAU logo on the front. It's got the traditional college numbers underneath it. And then the waist stripe actually has the landscape view of Flagstaff, so it's got like the mountains and a sunset, just a really cool look. And then they went with a classic third jersey with the retro script. I thought they knocked it out of the park here. Fitzy, we do a lot of jersey talk on this podcast. You've seen a lot of jerseys in your day. Like, what did you think about these NAU ones? Because I loved that they went with like maybe like a modern looking home and away, and then they just went classic retro on the third.
I was gonna say earlier that these are probably my favorites out of the ones we're discussing today. I think that they are able to pull off, you know, with a team or a school name that you got Jacks on the front. It just kind of, I don't know, it's different. So it kind of brings your eye to it. And yeah, I like them a lot. I like what they did.
Herm, I know we joked about when we were doing the bingo boards that the free space on our bingo boards would be a third jersey that features script. I know we see a lot of them in this day and age, but do you think this one kind of sets itself apart?
I would say so. I think the whole set is pretty stunning. The pattern on the navy and white jerseys is awesome, and they stand alone uniquely. Huge props to NAU for this entire set.
Yeah, and it was Rebirth that knocked it out too. And again, I there's something about the contrast of having a set that is different from the third. And when you can get all three colors, you know, a white, a navy, and a yellow, I just think it looks really good. I can't wait to see these in action. And we'll again, I keep kind of teasing Game of the Week, but I think we'll get to that in a little bit here. But Herm, I noticed yet you were defending another Arizona team on Twitter pretty actively this week, adamantly defending the Kachina jerseys. And I wanted to kind of mention this because it's a take I've had for a little bit, and maybe I haven't come out and talked about it yet, but I actually think that the Kachina jersey is overrated. I think people have an attachment to it because they miss the Coyotes, but I wanted to hear your feedback on maybe why you love that design so much.
The podcast is over, by the way. First off, I just want to let you know we're done. That's it. We're packing it up. It's been a great run, ladies and gentlemen. Hit cruising, future David, right now. I think it's an unbelievable connection to the desert. Few jerseys in pro sports look like the Kachina jersey. I think it's beautifully done with the Native American iconography. The fact that it was immediately a priority for them to get approval from local tribes is really special. If you know anything about the design, the history of the design itself, the Coyotes front office went to the designer and said, don't make it an angry animal logo, because so many expansion teams in the NHL at the time had a pissed off animal as their logo, the Sharks, the Panthers, and they wanted something that would stand alone. And I think it just works. It's perfect desert coloring. It's just a beautiful, beautiful jersey.
So maybe I don't know the full information, because I in my head always had wished that the Coyotes had maybe revamped that in the 2010s and even the 2020s instead of just reverting back to an exact replica. Was that never in the cards because of the Native American history woven into the design?
They kind of went away with it with the Howling Coyote in two separate iterations in the early 2000s, and then what they did, I think, like the early to mid 2010s when they changed the design a little bit. I saw a mock-up today that Justin Broly did that kind of combined the Howling Coyote with the best pieces of the Kachina jersey in a way that made it stand out a little bit. I can see what you're going for like a quote-unquote modern take on the Kachina. I think what they did was perfect in terms of not messing with perfection. Oftentimes, NHL teams can get it wrong by making those small, subtle tweaks that differentiate it from the original jerseys and decrease the quality.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was thinking about it too, because I have a little more frustration towards a team like the Ottawa Senators for reverting back to an exact replica when there really wasn't much there to begin with. I was thinking about it today, actually. I wonder how we would view the Kachina jersey if it had a similar lifespan to a fisherman jersey, you know, like something that had never been seen before in the 90s. You know, what would the fisherman jersey be similar to the Kachina if it had survived longer, and vice versa? I was thinking about that today because, like you mentioned, it is something that we have never seen before in sports.
I think there's just such a strong 90s nostalgia. I don't know if you're aware, but the Bridgeport Islanders rebranded to have the fisherman logo as their primary identity. They never should have changed away from the Sound Tigers. That was one of the coolest identities in all of sports, and then taking a fan base that's primarily Rangers fans, and then naming your team Islanders was a questionable Lou Lamoriello decision.
And I actually think the Providence Bruins teased a Pooh Bear alternate the other day. So everybody is getting in on the 90s jerseys right now.
All for that, by the way. All for the Pooh Bear jerseys.
You look back at the Burger King refresh, the Pizza Hut refresh, like everybody for a while was going back for that 70s, 80s look. And then now you see brands like Pepsi and others kind of bringing back this 90s nostalgia. And before you know it, we're going to have the whole 2010s refresh soon.
I'm going to say one thing and then we'll get back to hockey. It all comes down to what demographic is the primary consumer and holds the most dollar value when it comes to purchasing products, and companies will play into that middle of the road nostalgia. So the individuals that are in their 30s right now grew up on 90s Nick, and now you see bars going with 90s Nick themed drinks and things like that. That will change as we age into that primary consumer demo. Okay, back to club hockey.
I was going to say, we'll stop nerding out in a bit. I remember reading a piece about why Stranger Things was so successful. It was because it encapsulated the retro vibes of what was popular 30 years ago. And so that 30 is kind of the rough estimate of when retro stuff starts to come back. So there's a little history lesson for you Hockey House Pod listeners here. And Collins, what do you got?
Just, I guess, take note, club hockey jersey designers. If you want to make money on your jersey, go for right now a 90s themed jersey. If your club was around in the 90s, or maybe it wasn't, just make it look like the 90s.
Well, I want to give a shout out to Herm for running a fantastic photo of the year competition once again. We're going to get to our interview. We have a great interview this week. But Herm, we have a couple of photos that have been recognized already. And then maybe we'll reveal the other winners on the next episode here. But I wanted to give you an opportunity to maybe run through the moment category and the sty category, because there were some awesome shots that ended up on top for these.
RJ Forbes' winner for the moment category was my photo of the year the moment it got submitted to me. I think I remember looking over the content submission form and being like, yeah, he's running it back for another year. I think this is one of the most stunning hockey images that I've seen in my entire life. You'll see me wax poetically about it in Judge's Choice in a couple of days. Unbelievable image from a superbly talented photographer. And then Vinny O'Connor winning the sty category. I'm so proud of him as someone who I've had the opportunity to, I guess in this case, take under my wing is tongue-in-cheek given the fact that it's a plane school. Such a captivating, visually stunning image with vibrant colors, the architecture. It's so, so cool. And I'm really proud of him for earning the public win in this category.
Awesome. And again, we'll talk a little bit more in depthly about some of the other winners and categories, and maybe Herm and I will talk about our judges' choice picks on the next episode as well. But we have a very, very special interview on tap for you guys. I was telling Herm the minute we finished recording this felt like a retro Hockey House Pod interview from the early days. Maybe there's not a lot of actual hockey talk, but there's a lot of talk about what the hockey players do outside of hockey. And so the guys from Ohio, Andrew Wells and Sam Turner, did a phenomenal job. It was nice, you know, having met these guys in person when we made the trip to Athens last year, kind of get a behind the scenes look of what their college lives were like. And so as fifth year guys who now have jobs, it was fun to kind of recap with them, you know, five wonderful years that they had in Athens, Ohio. So without further ado, we'll turn it over to that interview and then we'll come back with our picks for Game of the Week. We're pleased to be joined by two former members of the Ohio University hockey team. These two Bobcats combined for 10 seasons and 299 games played in the ACHA. Former forward Andrew Wells and former captain Sam Turner. Boys, it's a pleasure to have you guys on the Hockey House Pod.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be here.
299 games, one away from 300.
Wellesley, do you know who played in more games?
Probably Thomas Pokorny, if I had to take a guess.
Turner's got 155. You've got 144. There's room for you to have a couple more games in there for you guys to break 300.
I don't know. I don't know if they'll have me back, to be honest.
Well, it's great to have you guys back. I figured we'd save you guys for when we needed a boost at the start of the season because of all the stories that you guys shared when we made the trip to Athens, Ohio, about midway through last season. Great to have you guys on. We were shooting the shit with Wellesley beforehand, Turner, but is it a little weird, you know, seeing everybody go back to campus and now, you know, you guys are at home working?
Yeah, definitely. I think probably the biggest adjustment in talking to other guys too is like, that's one of the most exciting parts of the season. You know, you finish your summer job and you get to go back, and you know, this time around doesn't happen. You just get to watch everyone else go back. So definitely difficult, but you know, it's good to see the boys having fun and, you know, continuing on tradition down there.
Wellesley, what's like the best part about being back on campus in the fall?
There's that little gap between when you get back to school and when like hockey really starts, you know, getting into gear. So I was always a guy that liked to get back, you know, a week too early as well, especially once, you know, you're out of the dorm. So that's, you know, most of your time there, you know, you have a week or two to kind of have fun. You get into it pretty quick. So those couple weeks or even days, depending on, you know, how late guys are getting down there, just where, you know, all your guys are, you know, back from, you know, wherever they lived and, you know, just having fun.
We got a loaded sheet going tonight. Herm can't be with us tonight. He's busy doing big boy work now in the city. So plenty of notes here, but I want to get a little backstory on you guys, both from Ohio. Turner, can you kind of walk me through just like pretty briefly, like where you played growing up and how you ended up at OU?
So I actually played high school in Columbus. It's the team I coach for now, but it's called the Columbus Chill. It's a pre-post team. So we play that. Like high school season's only November to February. So I think it was my sophomore or junior year we went down to OU on a visit. You know, I was familiar with the campus. Both my parents went there, but went down for a visit and got to skate at Bird. At that time, it was Hogan who was coaching. He ran the practice. And then we got to watch a game. We talked to a couple of players, and actually one of the players that spoke to us was Gianni Evangelisti, who ended up being the captain my freshman year. That after that visit, I kind of knew like, this is where I want to play. I talked to Hogan about it, and he was kind of like, you know, we don't take kids directly from Columbus High School. After that, I went and played a year of junior in New Hampshire, continued talking to Hogan and some of the guys in the team throughout the time. I think it was around like December, Coach Guggen watched a couple of my games and I got the offer, and, you know, it was a no brainer for me. It was always where I wanted to play. So yeah, that's kind of how I ended up there. And you know, very, very thankful for how it played out.
The craziest thing, you know, both of you guys being from Ohio and, you know, growing up playing high school hockey, I look at the commitments that Ohio is getting nowadays and I'm like, we may never see it again where there's guys playing high school hockey in Ohio and then going off to juniors and then back to OU. Wellesley, what was your path like growing up?
I played for the Cleveland Barons for a while, ended up going to the S-Mark Stars for my U14 and U16 years. Kind of what led me to Ohio, I'm sure it's, you know, the same story for a lot of guys that you see around the ACHA. Long story short, junior route didn't work out too well for me. Tried playing in Wilkes-Barre, didn't work out. Tried playing in Rockland for a little bit, didn't work out. So I ended up going to play U18 at the Barons. But when I was my senior year of high school, because I was a true freshman going into OU, so went to Rockland. OU reached out to me about the same time, ended up, you know, getting cut. So I was like, oh, like, okay, I'm just going to go play at the Barons. At first, I didn't think too much about OU. I knew some guys on the team like Singley, Zach Frank, Drew Magyar, Tyler Harkins, off the top of my head. But so they were kind of talking to me. Zach Frank was kind of a big, you know, reason why what pulled me to OU. But it's kind of same as Turner, you know, my U18 year, Hogan was coming to watch me here and there. Jeremy Browning was a part of the AAA Blue Jackets. So he kind of worked as a scout for OU. I still don't really know exactly what his job title was there. But February that year, finally, I was like, oh, like, okay, maybe I do want to keep playing. That's as interesting as it gets for me. I mean, that's all she wrote.
Was there a tryout when you got to campus there? Like, how do they pick the team at OU? Is it pretty much set in stone by the time everyone comes back in September? Or is there like, you know, as a kid coming fresh out of high school, did you have to earn your spot right away?
Before Turner and I got there, Hogan did have tryouts. And I don't think there's a set in stone number, but I think he liked to take at least one person from tryouts, whether that was like a mentality thing for the guys that got recruited there, the guys coming back or what. But there used to be a tryout. So when Turner and I were coming in, Hogan initially reached out to me just like Turner, and then towards the end of the year it was kind of known he was leaving, so that's kind of where Guggen stepped in. We had to go through a coaching change, one of the many things Turner and I went through. Coach Bell ended up getting the job, and he brought in a couple guys of his own as well, because Guggen brought in I think 11 people in her class, and then he probably brought in three or four of those guys. So he didn't really have a tryout that year. He was like, oh, these are our guys. For us, it was just kind of, we were there, we were on the team. Obviously you got to earn your ice time and whatnot, but there's no, like, I guess, fear, at least for me, of, you know, being cut or getting sent to D2 or whatnot.
Yeah, we probably should have thrown that in the intro. With the games played, you guys racked up in the ACHA. The head coaches that you guys played for would be a nice list as well. Turner, I want to ask you, like, what's it like being a freshman on the OU hockey team? Like, what's the vibe like in the locker room? What's the vibe like on campus? Like, give us a behind the scenes look at maybe what your first couple weeks as a Bobcat looked like.
Yeah, you know, especially coming from nowhere, New Hampshire, very exciting. There's a lot of people on campus, and being from Ohio, like, a lot of people from around Columbus, around Ohio that I know are already there. We're thrown in the dorms with 11 guys that don't really all know each other. Some of them know each other, but it's really exciting. You know, you have all these freshman orientation things to do, and then there's hockey things set up, and you saw Athens, like, it's a lot of energy in the town. So your first 3 weeks are like, I think while you're in it, it's probably really scary. And then looking back, it's like, that was one of the best 3 week stretches that you have there, you know, because it's all so new. You get into hockey right away, and it's no secret Bird Arena in September is not the best ice. So we have to, you know, battle through that. And it's just so much new at once, all good things. So you're trying to figure out how to balance it all. A lot of guys haven't been in school for a while. So, you know, balancing school again, an unbelievable experience. Like I said, those first 3 weeks are some of my best 3 week stretches. NOU. So much fun.
Well, so you mentioned the characters in the big freshman class you had. I'm looking at the photo right now. I dug through the archives. I'm looking at all 11 freshmen here in the green uniforms on media day here. What do you remember about this freshman class, some of the characters, and maybe most particularly Andrew Saka, and maybe your first memories of meeting him?
I could go through and try and list. I mean, there's a lot. I don't want to go through and list them all off and, you know, forget anyone. But I mean, we definitely had characters. And, you know, for me, for example, I played with Schmizzy, Rossi, Hastings. Like, again, I'm trying to think. I don't want to miss anyone. But so, like, I knew a good amount of guys coming in. I never knew Turner, for example. Me and Lenny fought U18. Saka, I knew him. Me and him were the same birth year, 2000s, and he played for Penn's Elite most of his life. I was committed to OU, and I remember I was at the Mid-Am tournament, like, last year, U18, and someone's like, I think it was Schmizzy, maybe. He was like, oh, like, do you hear, like, Saka's going to OU? And I was like, what? Like, I really didn't, you know, see him going there. Coming in, he was definitely a character, to say the least. Well, he took a year off of high school, but being on the younger side, I think, as Turner touched on, that energy in Court Street, I think, got the best of us at times.
First week, so many stories. I know a couple guys got punched in the face for various reasons, just being a little too excited maybe to be an OU. So much you're not used to, and then all of a sudden you're thrown into it and you're having a lot of fun, but it's still like first week, like you're still doing training camp stuff. So have a lot of fun, have a great time. And then we, you know, wake up and go for like a 3 mile run, like holding weights on each side, like up Richland Bridge. Like, it's a wild experience.
You guys had a pretty good team that year. And like, looking back on it, there's a lot of what ifs, right? Everything gets canceled at the end of the season. But, you know, you had Liberty and Adrian are 1-2 all year. You guys are right behind them in the rankings. You know, Minot's in the mix. Lindenwood's in the mix again. Like, would have been a free for all down in Frisco. Like, what are some maybe memories you have from that season? Your first memories in the ACHA? Like, wow, like this hockey's actually pretty good. Wellesley, I'll throw it over to you first.
Right off the bat, like, that season, that was one of those seasons that we were like, damn, like, I really wish, you know, you could have seen that play out. Obviously, like, would we have won it? I don't know. Lindenwood was really good. Like you said, Liberty, Adrian, all those teams were powerhouses, like, skill wise and, you know, actual, like, play wise. It doesn't change as you get older. Like, I'm sure it's still around the same level of hockey. But being a freshman, I remember Lindenwood in specific. They had some guys that were men. It was kind of scary. For me, especially, like, playing U18 hockey, you don't really get, like, those men. Like, my eye-opening moment, it might make Turner laugh. We had Thomas Bicorni, who, fifth year, he's, like, 26 years old, I think. Great guy, but he liked to hit in practice. And, like, this is, like, early in the year. I remember we're doing, like, a one-on-one drill, me versus him. Go to get the puck, and, like, you know, U18 or, you know, levels like that, you're not really hitting in practice. Like, guys don't want to get hit. I just remember I go get the puck, open up my chest, and Poco just runs me over. Flat on my back, I'm like, oh, shit. Like, here we go. Like, I guess this is how it is. That was probably my eye-opening, like, oh shit. Like, in terms of that season, I mean, I will always remember first big crowd I ever played in front of besides Bird, but after Dad's weekend, that's when we really pick up. So we had to go play Liberty, Midnight Madness. Any team, any guy that's played in that, you kind of know how intense that really gets. I've never been a part of anything like that. So we start the game, we give up a goal like 20 seconds in, place erupts. So I played on the line with Polko and Craddock, two of our older guys. And, you know, I guess we were like kind of the shutdown line. Like, so he puts us out there, face off drops, 7 seconds goes by, they score again. So I'm out there for 7 seconds. I have never heard a louder rink in my life. Never been a part of it. I like rewatched it so many times. I couldn't believe it. They always post their highlights and I watched that goal. And you just see me when we get scored on, my head just like goes up a little bit. That was, I think, the craziest moment in terms of like atmosphere I've ever been a part of.
It's an ACHA rite of passage because I played there my freshman year as well, which would have been 2019, 2020. And I still go back and watch like the Dash 2 I was that night, because it's just like, you know, it was on ESPN Plus. It's in front of 2,000 people. And again, it's not the most beautiful back check I had. I tried to haul the guy down in front of the net. There is something to be said about like experiencing that moment in the huge crowd. Turner, I'm guessing these crowds were a lot bigger than the ones you played in front of in Tri-Town Arena in Hooksett, New Hampshire.
Yeah, Tri-Town doesn't pack too much. Our first home game, we were actually fired up. They brought in a mechanical bowl and it was like dollar beer night, and it was crazy. Like, we actually packed the barn. It was like, oh, this is awesome. This is gonna be fun. And I think the rest of the time, like outside of parents, we'd get maybe 20 fans. So funny, Wells, you mentioned that story, because I remember, I don't know if it was the first game I started, but it was the first big game I started. Yeah, I was Dash 2 in 27 seconds. It was at midnight at Liberty. I'm like, oh, this is great. So kind of the same welcome to UCHA moment, I think.
You mentioned Polko, like we had him on in the early days of the podcast. Like, he had some crazy stories from that team. Another guy that we had on from OU was Harks. Like, what do you remember memories from Harks from that freshman year?
Harks was always like kind of the swagger of the locker room, you know, like played a very offensive game. He's very skilled and loved celebrating in front of the fans. He was not scared to kind of give it to you as a freshman if you weren't living up to like what Ohio hockey stands for. I was always more of a like laid back player, I guess, like not very emotional, kind of like think the game through instead of like emotions take over. Definitely remember him, you know, like getting on me for that, showing a little more emotion and being that kind of like energizer bunny on the team, putting away a lot of goals for us. So definitely remember that from Harks for sure.
So I knew Harks. I actually played for his dad my first year U18. Just like Turner said, he had just as much swagger off the ice as he did on the ice. I've never seen a guy with so much confidence. I mean, I can't say enough good things about him.
These are the good things we like to hear. It's like, it seems like we picked the right guy to have on the pod a couple years ago, having Harks on. So, I mean, and Polko for that matter too. He was a huge beauty when he came on as well. But that kind of transitions us into your sophomore year. Before we get to the craziness of a coaching change, you get the craziness of coming back to school in the middle of a pandemic. Wellesley, what do you remember from maybe those days of like, are we going to play? Are we not going to play?
I mean, just like everyone else, it sucked. Like, I mean, I'm sure Turner will agree. I think that was easily the, you know, worst year of hockey, I think, program wise, you know, experience wise. I just remember, you know, sitting at home and the whole summer, you know, we still have these recruits, you know, supposedly coming. We're having Zoom meetings. Oh yeah, like we're going to be back now. And then, you know, a couple weeks later it was, oh, okay, now we're going to be back later. I remember I got back to campus first weekend of September. It's Turner's birthday. I was all pumped up, got to school. Our whole team tested positive within like 2 or 3 days. So I was locked inside right away. But the first semester, absolutely brutal. The school wouldn't even put the ice in. We're doing outside workouts in groups. I'm not really sure like how other schools handled it or how similar it was to OU. Everything had to be in groups for us of like 6 or 7 people. So we're doing outside workouts, shooting pucks on concrete into the nets, like on the side of the rink. Like I said, they didn't put the ice in yet. So Bell has us with the soccer ball, like doing like power play shit or like passing it around. Honestly, it was so miserable. And then, I mean, I can't remember when it got announced we play, but I just remember I was so psyched, whether it was like being psyched about, you know, playing hockey again or being done with what we were doing.
That makes me think of like the scene in Miracle when they're in the film room and they're watching the Soviets off-ice training program. Like you guys just doing random stuff with the soccer balls and anything close to resemble a hockey game outside of the rink.
That's what it was for sure. I mean, Turner, did I miss anything big? I don't know.
We did practice like every day, Monday through Friday. And then Friday was a competition day, but it was still within your six. So it was just like a big 3-on-3 game. Whoever did the best off of like these weird competitions and stuff, they would pick their practice time for the next morning. Guys would pick their time based on like how well they do. So it was kind of fun to like, you'd have a group that would be done with practice by like, they practiced at 8, but they'd be done by 9:30. You have another group that want to get on the ice till like 2. At that point, all the other boys are off, like getting their Saturday started, having a good time, like meeting up at Palmer Place Courtyard, but whatever. So that was always a fun, like a little asterisk to it. At least we had that to look forward to. But the practice rivalries that year got massive because it was the same six guys every single day. It was who you lived with too. So like you'd get in these fights at practice after practicing with the same guys and then go right back home to the same guys. You're like, oh my God. Like, I think we handled it well, but it was just a lot of probably unnecessary tension brought up from that.
I mean, I can only imagine like the conversations when you get back to the rink and maybe you're making breakfast or you're getting dinner ready. You know, you have a guy that you almost got into a scrap with like 4 hours ago, you know, eyeing you across the coffee table.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I lived with Zach Curry. Him and I would battle, and it was like, we had that mutual respect where it's like, you know, you battle on the ice, and then once you're off the ice, it's done. There are definitely times where you get home and you'd be like, so like, why'd you hit me like that today? Like, what the fuck, man? You're like, dude, I'm trying to make dinner now. Like, it's over.
It was also comical, depending on who won that week. You would kind of know what times they were picking because there's definitely some houses that like going out more than others. So sometimes you might have lucked out where if a certain house won, you know, they were taking the late time so they could go out during the week.
That's what I wanted to hear. I knew somebody was finding a loophole in the whole system there. Well, let's dive into the Liberty trips now, because there's a memorable story that comes from all of this, and I believe it happens after the coaching change your junior year. Turner, maybe I'll just turn it over to you for this one, because I think you were responsible for it.
Yeah, a little background on that coaching change. That was pretty unexpected, and it happened in like late August. We're scrambling for a new coach. Thankfully, Leo was on the staff already, so he was there kind of running it. Then they ended up getting the job. Mid-September, he's able to like take over, and we have this trip to Liberty and realize we don't have any buses booked. None of our like logistics for these road trips were booked, even though they're on the schedule. We're last minute. We have to go to Liberty. The only thing we can do is take these vans. We have 5 vans, I believe. So we have head coach take one, assistant coaches take the other two, then the other two were driven by players. So it was just like whoever it was, upperclassmen, captains, whatever, just take turns driving. We go down to play Liberty. We play them. We try to get an earlier game. We're like, hey, we're driving ourselves back. The rink's booked up. You know, they have like 5 teams down there or whatever. So we can't get our game moved. We stay at 7 and we don't get on the road till 10:30. And it's like a 5.5-hour drive back. We're driving for like 2 hours, and then I'm in the van and it's time to make a driver switch. So I take it over at about like 1 a.m. in the hills of West Virginia. We're the last van in this group of 5. So we're like convoying it down this highway. I mean, we're going like 85. Like, we just want to get home. You see like from the vans in front of us, the headlights, you start seeing like 7 deer just hop out of nowhere. You're going 85, nothing you can do. Don't veer for deer. I'm just praying these deer like stop before they get to me. And one of them just runs all the way through. And like, I hit this thing head on that, like, I swear the head flew off. The van is completely totaled. We're all like, I think it was like 3 a.m. when we hit it. Some of the guys are asleep. The guy sitting in the front seat with me just looks at me like, oh my God, what do we do? We're like in total shock. None of the steering works or anything. So we have to like wrestle it to the side of the road and just let it like come to a stop. It starts like leaking stuff from the bottom. We're like, oh my God. And we look up. The other vans didn't see us, so they just keep going. So these vans are gone, and we're all there like, oh my God, what do we do? And they're like, none of us really know what's going on. We don't know what's been hit. We're like, I don't know if this thing's safe to be in. So we're just standing outside the van trying to call, but everyone's asleep. Finally get a hold of one of the drivers. They're like, oh yeah, like there's a turnaround. Like, 5 minutes ahead. They're already 10 minutes gone. So we stand outside this van for like 30 minutes, middle of nowhere, West Virginia Hills. And like someone brings up the movie, The Hills Have Eyes. And we're like, oh, perfect. Like, thanks for bringing up a horror scene right now. Like, that's great. We're all waiting for these vans to come back. And one of our teammates, Rossi, doesn't tell anyone, but he goes to try to find the deer head that flew off. So he walks like 100 yards back, then turns around. And it's just his flashlight, like, moving back and forth. And we're like, holy shit, like, what is that? Like, who is that? And he's, like, not answering us. He's, like, messing with us now. And, yeah, we end up getting picked up at, like, 4 a.m. by two vans. Vans are already totally packed. So, like, we got to scrunch into these vans for the last hour and a half. Don't get back to Athens until, like, 6 a.m. Got to fill out all these insurance reports. And, like, we called the cops that were there in West Virginia, and we're like, yeah, we left a totaled Ohio University van on the side of the highway. Like, keys are in it. You guys just take it. I don't know. I remember calling my parents the next morning and just being like, so you won't believe what happened last night. And they're like, crazy story. Still doesn't really feel real, but yeah, it was nuts.
When you first told that story, I don't know where we were on Court Street, but I was losing it. I mean, that somebody listening to this is going to hear this and be like, that's why we're not taking vans, right? Like,
I don't think they'll believe it either. I'd be like, no way.
if my memory jogs me correct, this season was filled with eventful moments like this one. Wellesley, what do you remember about the Olympia breaking down between periods against Western Michigan?
Really quick, Turner, correct. This is Dad's weekend, right?
You were wearing the camo jersey. Okay. I went and found the video.
Backstory about that was, so any team that's came to us Dad's weekend, you know it, that rink is fucking packed. Like, it's actually like one of the coolest weekends of the year. Like, our Saturday night games getting sold out on like Wednesday or Thursday. Like, signs are up in the rink, like, all games are sold out, blah blah blah. So, you know, you look forward to this every year. First period, you play the first period. We always had a guy that would go check the time, because you know at OU it was, oh, you always go out on the ice on, you know, 4 minutes, whatever it was. We're sitting there, we're like, oh, like, go check the time. And, you know, he comes back in, he's like, the Zamboni's just sitting in the middle of the ice. And we're like, what are you talking about? He's like the Zamboni, like, it's in the middle of the ice, like, it's not moving. And like, granted, this is a sold out crowd. Like, it's, there's so many people there, like, probably a lot of new people too, because like, Dad's weekend, like, that's what you do at OU. Like, the university, like, promotes, you know, like, an itinerary, I guess. And we're like the headline, like, 7 o'clock Ohio University hockey. And like, that's why we always sell out so quick. But so we're like, oh my God, like, what is happening? Blah, blah, blah. Just, you know, not thinking too much of it. Like, oh, like, you know, might just be stuck, you know, whatever it might be. Maybe caught like half the ice. Our coach comes in, he's like, you guys aren't going to like this, but, you know, we're going to need some guys to, you know, go get the Zamboni off the ice. And we're like, oh my God. So right away, you're like, freshman, go. Like, you don't want to be seen out there. So we send out maybe four guys. Western Michigan sent out, you know, three or four guys. You got two teams, sold out rink, pushing the Zamboni. It was probably stuck around center ice-ish. So like halfway down the ice, we end up playing the rest of the game on dirty ice. Cause then the conversation comes in, like, it's like, how do we go from here? Cause that's not the only Zamboni story that year. We have our games against Illinois too. So like, we're like, okay, do we play? What do we do? So like, we all like collectively decide, like, let's just play on the dirty ice. And it's like, granted, our ice is still really bad. So not only is the ice really bad, but now it's not getting cut. It's something I've never seen before. I didn't even want to go out and look at them push it, because I was like, this is just, oh my God. And like, watching the videos of these guys pushing the Zamboni down the ice might have been one of the funniest things ever. Like, one of the most like ACHA moments I think you can come up with.
My good buddy John Desmond was the captain of Western that year. He vividly remembers like somebody coming into the Western locker room and being like, we need a couple of you guys to come help us push the Zamboni. And then him at the time being like, what? Like, it's their Zamboni. Like, they should be pushing it. Like, what do we have to do? And then I checked the box score. You guys ended up winning 10-2. So the poor kids on Western had to come help you push the Zamboni and then get pumped 10-2 on dirty ice. And Wellesley, you said this wasn't the only time the Zamboni acted up.
This one's a little bit more controversial too. We were playing Illinois, which that year, they weren't great. I mean, not as good as, you know, they were in the previous years. So it's coming around that time where rankings really start to matter. End of January, you know, February, like, we're ranked, a good amount ahead of them. And like same story, you know, go in the locker room. I think this was after the second period. I mean, we were down, I think like 5-2, something like that. Same exact story. Someone comes in, like the Zamboni's stuck. It was in like the back left corner, I guess. Like if you're looking at it from our front door, back left corner. And so same shit. We all started thinking like, oh my God, are we going to have to push the Zamboni again? At Bird, they always have students working. And I don't know if all of them are the most qualified to, you know, do the jobs that they're assigned. But so when it got stuck, they didn't shut the water off. So as the Zamboni's sitting there, and we already had like a bad pipe down there, because I mean, even how we cool the ice at Bird, it's very old, I guess. So the water's just running already in a bad spot on the ice, and it creates like this huge hole in the ice. And it's like, it's not one of those things where, you know, get a little slush and pack it in and, you know, you just don't hope someone goes over it. So we're sitting there. Did they finally get the Zamboni off the ice? We didn't have to push it, thank God. So now they're just looking. There's this big hole in the ice. And it's like I said, it's 5-2. Like we're in the locker room like this whole time, like, fuck, like we just want to get back out there. Like we need this win. Like this really won't help us in rankings if we blow this. It ultimately came down to the coaches, and obviously our coach is like, let's play. Whether it was for safety or whether it was for them, Illinois obviously decided not to play. So the game got called a 5-2 win, Illinois. I mean, obviously, who knows if we would have won. Like, they might have still beat us. Like, not saying we would have came back and won. But, yeah, that was the other Zamboni story, which that one was a little bit more controversial, though.
I mean, that's a good one. I want to ask you guys, because I've seen plenty of videos from Bird. I think we've talked a lot about maybe the character of the building and maybe the condition of some of the tools in the building. But there's something about Bird, I feel like, is when the games get late, maybe it's the old CSCHL days that come back. Something about when the game is late and the score is out of hand, the fists start to fly at Bird. And I saw it firsthand when Syracuse came to town. I've seen videos when Pitt comes to town. I've seen videos when Illinois comes to town. What do you guys think it is about Bird? Is it the crowd that gets it into it and just fist starts flying? Turner, I can see your gears turning right now. What comes to mind?
Well, I've always asked myself the same question, because I've never really been one to get in fights like that. Like compared to other places, it does seem to happen a lot at Bird. The ROTC guys are there a lot, and then there's like a student section that is right by where all the fights kind of end up happening. So that can definitely be part of it. I feel like a lot of teams that come in and play us there, it's, you know, everyone has their pros and cons for their rank, but OU does pack. It's so old and like all made out of metal, so it gets so loud, so it's just tension's flying just a little bit higher. So I think, yeah, that contributes to, you know, the fighting that always occurs at the end of those games.
Wellesley, do you have a favorite? Is there a brawl that sticks out to you when you think of Bird?
I can think of plenty, because unlike Turner, I'm probably more on that physical side, where I kind of live for that a little bit more. So it might have been that same weekend as the Zamboni, but Illinois was in town. There's like 2 seconds left. They're breaking the puck out. I'm coming down the wall. Every guy that likes to hit dreams, kid's getting the center's getting a pass, looking back for it. I put my shoulder right into his chest. Like I hit him pretty good. At first it started as just like a, you know, one or two guys like grab each other. It escalated pretty quick. One of their guys came in. It was one of the cheapest things I've ever seen. Like came in, like there's a video where you just see it like flying across the ice, like cross checks Hastings, like upper shoulders, like buried him. So you see me jump on him, like grab him, like throw him to the ice. Guys' helmets are flying off, like gloves are going everywhere. And we, like, out of all of that, I didn't even get a suspension. Other guys did. Then we played Minot the next weekend too, which then sucked, because half of our guys were out, not the half, but a good amount of guys were out, you know, that first game against Minot. I played in it. After the game, Leo pulled me out of the room, and he looked like he was like scared to tell me something. I was like, oh my God, like what happened? Like I was thinking like something off the ice happened. And he's like, oh, like the league reviewed the fight. Like you're actually suspended the next night. And I was like, it's like, oh, like, okay. Like not that big of a deal, but that's probably the fight that comes to mind the most, just because I was kind of like heavily involved in it. We definitely had some guys in our team that like to get rowdy at Bird.
That was one that had come to mind in my memory. Again, I don't even know if I've seen the clip of your hit. I've seen the clip of this Illinois kid going like full speed across the ice and hitting Hastings. What else? We got to talk a little bit about Nationals, because you guys, you know, had a little bit of a run here back to St. Louis, and you beat Minot in a pretty big upset when you beat Niagara, then you beat Minot. You have have your run in 2023. Turner, you get an overtime winner there. Then you go back to this year, another overtime winner against Minot State. Like, they seem to be the favorite every year. And then twice you guys went to nationals and ended their season. Was there something in the water in those games? Or was it like, you know, you had played them in the regular season, you knew what to expect? Turner, is there anything you remember about playing Minot?
So our junior year, we were 15 and they were second. And we hadn't played them after we beat Niagara. We have that game. We're just like, I mean, we got nothing to lose here. Like, let's just go play our game. Whatever happens, happens. We play a great game. We beat them. I think after that is when we played them in regular season our senior year at home, and we beat them the first night, and then the second night we lose, but we lose like in a pretty poor fashion that up to interpretation, but the refs may or may not have a large part to do with it. So I think just our confidence against that team was high, and then we beat them in regular season. So when we get them again, we're like, we're confident, you know, we know what to expect out of them. We kind of feel like we have their number, and, you know, who knows if that's how they felt, if they felt like, oh God, like we always find a way to lose them, whatever, but didn't really matter for us. It was like, we know, like we're confident against this team. Like we want this team. We want that draw. A big shout out to our goalie as well. Like when he's on, like it's very hard to score on him. And after playing against Minot in regular season, senior year, he beat them first night when we won at Bird. And then he didn't play the second night. Our goalie was on. The team's confident, just grinded it out and eventually had to end. I think that's my favorite moment from OU is like that last OT winner. I actually think you guys might have posted it, but there's a video of Wells and I going off the ice after that. And we just kind of look at each other and we're like, did it again. What's up? And like that video is awesome. But I think that's just a good encapsulation of like how we felt. Like, again, I don't know how Minot felt, and it didn't matter to us. We had our confidence, and I think that's what like propelled us into that, able to upset them that many times.
Well, Wellesley, I got to ask you, because I mean, we could talk about Turner's overtime winner against Jamestown, but it's kind of just like a weak shot from the point that maybe gets tipped on the way in. Like, we can call it what it is, but have you seen him go coast to coast like he did for that Minot game winner? He goes coast to coast and then feeds Albers on the backhand. Have you seen that before?
The video, or like just in general?
No, in general. Like, is he the kind of guy who likes to take it coast to coast? Because I remember watching that game in overtime, and he gets the puck around the net, and it's like, oh, Turner's just going to take this thing to the house, and then a last minute dish, and it's in the back of the net.
I'll give it to Turner. He definitely, that wasn't out of character. I mean, Nationals overtime is the most exciting thing in the world, to see your D winding it up, going down to the corner, like not necessarily like making a little toe drag or whatever. In all honesty, when that goal happened, I didn't even see Albers coming in. I didn't really know what Turner was doing. Like you damn near black out in those moments. Like, even looking back to that, you know, Nationals this past year with Oswego in overtime, like I can't even tell you how the goal went in. Like, I know it was just like a scrum in front. Like, when you're in those situations, like your brain's kind of like off. You're just like, you're there. I see Turner winding it up, and it's like, not saying I didn't have confidence in him to make a play, but you know, you're in overtime, you see your D, you know, making like moves through the sticks and whatnot, and you're just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And then next thing I knew, I saw like Albers flying in, you know, him start going crazy. And like Turner mentioned, that clip of us hugging, like that had to have been like one of the most surreal feelings I've ever had playing, at least on the good side. Like, he loved to wheel the puck, and he was pretty good at it.
Turner, are you blacking out as well during that play? Or like when you dish that backhand, are you like fully prepared to start booking it around the net in case you got to go on the back check?
Like, well, as I blacked out for the Oswego game, I don't remember that. A couple other moments in the Nationals, I don't remember, but I remember that play very well. I remember the move and like why I decided to do it, and it's not out of character like to rush the puck, but can agree with Wells, I went a little too far that time for sure. At that point in the game, I'm going every other shift, it's the end of overtime, we've already played overtime in this Nationals. I'm like, this game needs to be over, like our goalie is getting peppered, he's tired, we need to end this. So I'm like, fuck it, let's see what happens. And you know, all the credit to Albers, like I kind of saw him, but he was screaming for it. So that definitely helps make that pass. You know, I remember that one very clearly. And it's one of those plays where, you know, you make the pass and you're already behind the net. I had the best view to see if the puck went in or not. And like, it's basically shot right at me as I'm behind the net, see it hit the back of the net. And like, the video is hilarious because I love Albers. Like, he's able to go right into Sally mode. And like in that situation, I was so excited. All I can do is like put my arms up and like look around in disbelief, like, oh my God, like it's over. We did it. Like it's pretty funny. But yeah, I remember that one well.
Well, I didn't mean to overshadow the overtime winner from the year before. Like, what do you remember about that one against Jamestown in all places, Marlboro?
Honestly, a more memorable one.
Oh, that's right. You guys had the whole thing with the goal at the buzzer.
Felton and I are on the ice, and I remember it's like they ice it probably like 10 seconds left, so we have one more breakout.
Were they aiming for the empty net? Like, was it like the kid tried to score and iced it, or they just cleared the puck?
I think they just cleared it, so it was like kind of a neutral zone breakout, but I look back, look up, and like 10 seconds left. So dish it to forwards. They take it down the left side, and it's like ends up being a scrum. I'm like, oh my God, like that's it. But puck pops up to Felton on the left D, and he gives it over to me at the right D, and I'm like outside the top of the circles. Honestly, like I'm not close enough that I can just score on the unscreened goalie. And in my mind, I'm like, there's probably like 3 seconds left. Like we could play for a rebound here. So I just send it at his pad, and then I can't even remember who scored it, but someone ends up burying it home, and like we sit there. It feels like it was like an hour, but I'm sure it was only like 3 minutes. They reviewed it. They get the call back, like goal, and then like the locker room going into overtime. Like we were all so excited. It's like, settle down. Like, thank God. I mean, in overtime, I think it was only like 5 minutes into it. Like that puck comes up the wall, and there's a guy on me. So I pick it up and just throw it at net, goes in. And it's the same feeling, you know, like OT winner in playoffs is. I don't know how guys have the ability to like think about how to sell during that time. I'm always just like arms up, like, holy shit, what do I do? Like, that was an awesome one too.
Anytime I've ever been in an overtime game where I'm like lining up for a faceoff, I'd be like, yo, like if I scored here, like this celly would be pretty cool. Like student section's right here, like that'd be pretty cool. Like you almost always end up losing in overtime. I don't get how guys in the moment can come up with the creative stuff like Albers. I forgot to mention, we kind of dove right into your senior years. We started talking about nationals. Was it which year was it that you guys went to Brock? Because I've heard a lot about this trip. One, you guys did an exhibition. You beat them on the first night, correct? Like you kind of took them by surprise.
We went in there, and I mean, I've never played against any guy. Like they literally looked like a pro team out there. Like all those guys just H out of the O, like, or like whatever junior league. I think shock on both sides to an extent. Like not saying, you know, we thought we were going to get killed, but we definitely knew those guys were pretty good. And I don't think many of those guys have ever played like American hockey, I guess. Like physical wise, we ran their show. I remember that we had some hits where even I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God. Like we had Farrell at the time, Reeve laid out somebody. I don't know how he didn't break his neck. Like it was one of those ones where you get hit like 3 feet off the boards. It was a clean hit, but I think physically they didn't expect us whatsoever.
At the end of that game, we have a face off in our D zone with like 30 seconds left. And this kid comes up to me and he's just like, so how old are you? I'm like, I'm 24. Like I'm a fifth year. He's like, oh, okay. Where'd you play junior? I was like, USPHL Premier. He's like, oh, he's like, yeah, how about you? He's like, I played with Connor Bedard a couple years ago. You know, I'll beat you. They showed it the next day. That's for sure.
At the end of the weekend, did the boys get to celebrate a little bit?
Just a little. Yeah.
Yeah, we beat them, but it was also their first game. And I mean, you know, I don't want to discredit it, like us, but I also don't want to discredit them. Like they were definitely an absolutely unreal team, but we were done for the day. So Phil Angerville, he was my roommate. He's graduated now as well. He's from his hometown. So he's obviously like, boys, come on. I gotta show you around. So we all, and in Canada, casinos are 18. So we all start at the casino. Everybody wins, or like 90% of our team wins. Like I won like 650 that night. I mean, guys won more than me too. Like some of us go to Margaritaville right on the falls, other guys go elsewhere. We ended up all meeting though at the end at this, I forget what the bar was called, but Phil made sure we did it right. We had a VIP section, bottle service. I couldn't even tell you how many bottles we went through. The night got pretty out of hand.
Successful trip north of the border. I'm trying to think. So you guys did the exhibition against Brock. Did you guys, was it your fifth year that you guys played Buffalo State? Yeah, no, in terms of skill-wise, like what do you remember that, you know, playing an ACHA schedule and then, you know, thrown in a Division III exhibition? Because we always talk on the pod, like we'd love to see more ACHA 1 NCAA Division III matchups.
We also played Chatham our freshman year. As I scored my first college goal against Chatham, which was kind of funny. We ended up beating them 4-3. Last year, Buffalo State, I think we lost either 2-0, 2-1, but that was kind of the start of our, we went on like a 7-game streak where we averaged like one goal a game. Like it was brutal. It like started in Maryville the weekend before we got shut out the last game, and then shut out that game, brutal weekend against Niagara. So we weren't playing our best hockey then. They were a good team. Like I'd say more well-disciplined than ACHA teams, like probably like a more rigid game of hockey. A lot of guys that, you know, want to be the skill guy in the ACHA a lot. And that team had a lot more structure, a lot more, I guess, like rigid gameplay. So it was a 2-0 game. They scored one really nice goal on us. We couldn't find a way to bury it, but never felt like we were out of that game. Never felt like we were out of our league, like very well. We played them 10 times. You know, I'd expect a pretty even split. I think it's a testament to like the level of hockey. I think it's good hockey, and it showed when we played that level team as well.
Yeah, Wellesley, anything more to add about the exhibitions? Did you get to play in that game against Chatham freshman year?
I was there. Brutal rink. That's right off the bat what I remember. Chatham, they were a good team as well. I mean, D3 wise, they might have been, you know, a tiny, like a little bit lower than, you know, where Buffalo State is, for example. But yeah, that game was fine. I mean, Buffalo State, like Turner said, like, I don't want to sit here and make excuses. I mean, we lost. We weren't putting the puck in the that. I mean, it's no one's fault but our own. But yeah, they were a good team. I like Turner said, I don't think it'd be unreasonable to say, you know, we split. If not, I mean, I think last year we were a great team. I think we just caught them at a bad time. But it's definitely a cool experience. I mean, you know, people, you know, might, you know, sit there and judge guys and they're like, oh yeah, I play in the ACHA for whatever, but then at the same time we're like, oh yeah, well, we beat this team, we play these teams and we have a good game. Kind of like nice on our end just to, you know, get that chance just to, you know, kind of tell people like, yeah, you know, we did that. And, you know, not to be cocky about it, it's just, you know, I think we were a good team, and it's unfair for anybody to tell us otherwise.
One thing I want to ask you guys about is the CSCHL, because you guys got to see kind of two sides of the ACHA. You got to see what it's like to be a part of like a really big conference, and now there's some other conference realignment going on in ACHA Division I, but you guys were in the old CSCHL, and then you also got to be an independent. In terms of schedules and rivalries, Turner, like what did you prefer? Did you like having, you know, the opportunity to play a bunch more home games against teams maybe you wouldn't regularly face, or did you miss the days of, you know, the rivalries with Lindenwood and the Iowa States and, you know, Robert Morris?
I loved the CSCHL. It was awesome. Like, the games always meant more. It was echoed throughout the locker room. It's something else to play for, another banner to play for. Our freshman year, Iowa State, really good. Illinois, really good. Lindenwood, really good. And then Robert Morris is like, you can never count them out either. So it was really solid. Yeah, I like that way better. It helps you get up for a lot more games, and I think it prepares you a little bit better for nationals as well. Like, sometimes when you play these teams from out of town, like from way out of town that you don't know anything about, that you see in the rankings or ranked a lot higher than, it's like not as easy to get excited about if there were a similarly ranked team in your league. I loved the CSCHL. It was a little tough to see it go, but just overall seeing, like, for one reason or another, whatever it was, but the downfall of those other programs in the CSCHL was tough, because that was like what the rivalry was. It was great. We were still able to hang that last CSCHL banner up, so at least we got one of them added on to the bird.
We skimmed over it when talking about your freshman year, but Wellesley, what do you remember about the CSCHL tournament your freshman year at Illinois? Because that was pretty eventful. You had one of the longest games in ACHA history, and then a crazy bus ride back.
I mean, yeah, like Turner said, I love the CSCHL. We get there. It was Iowa State and Lindenwood. They go into whatever it is, 7 overtimes, which is hard to believe on that Illinois ice, too, because it's so big. Like, someone's bound to, you know, mess up, and someone's going to get beat wide and, you know, give up odd man rushes. But all guys get ready for games in different ways. See, it's kind of hard to then be like, okay, like, now we got to wait another at least 15, 20 minutes. And we ended up sitting in, like, our game didn't start until I think like midnight, and like, because I remember it's like where we were supposed to play at like 7 or 8, whatever it was, like the stands are packed, like, you know, Illinois, their whole crowd was there, the rink looked damn near sold out, and like every overtime, like, people were periodically leaving. So by the time we got on the ice, the barn was maybe like half full. We didn't get back to the hotel because the time changed too, a daylight saving, so it moved up. I think we got back to the hotel at like 4:30 a.m. 5 a.m., something like that.
I remember seeing those updates on Twitter the next morning. And again, this is like pre-Hockey House pod days. Like, we imagine the clicks we would have gotten on a post like that going to 7 overtimes. And definitely, I remember seeing on the other side of the ACHA looking at that one as well. I want to ask you guys about the jerseys you've worn, because there's been a lot of jerseys in your time at OU, very good friends with the people at 614 Hockey. They've done a great job with your most recent set. But looking back on it, is there a particular jersey? Like, I know you guys really went hard on the specialty jerseys your first couple years. Turner, is there one that sticks out to you that was your favorite?
Yeah, for me personally, basically just for selfish reasons, but our first whiteout jersey, there's this picture. It was like one of the first games I started as a freshman, and the like light from the bird nest or whatever it is, like where all the announcers are, it's like coming down like basically right at my feet, and then there's a picture from like behind, and like the green glow from the other lights are on like the back of my jersey, so the picture is like really cool, and it's one of my favorite pictures from like my time there. So that was my favorite jersey just because of that. It's fun to do all those different jerseys, and now we have them all, so it's like cool to see all the different ones. But when I come back and think about what was my favorite just because of that picture, that was mine.
Wellesley, what about you? Is there one, I mean, is there an Instagram-worthy photo that comes to mind of you in one of these specialty jerseys?
The people at 614 did an unbelievable job. I can't say enough things about how sharp those jerseys look. Like, honestly, I don't want to say I was against it, but if we had a vote, I probably would have voted against it going with the black year. You know, I loved, like, my favorite jersey was our freshman year ones, like just the white and green, and then the green and white. Like, I just think they were so clean with them, the green helmets, green gloves, green pants. Like not that like it matters 99% of the season, but I like it. You could have, like, at Nationals, for example, you could have peeked your head in the rink and be like, oh, OU's playing. Like, you don't even have to look. You just, I guess you can say iconic. I just thought they were so sharp. I loved them. And I do have a couple good pictures on Instagram with them too. Got one with me and my boy Kyle Craddock, me scoring pretty early in the game, and it's a good, nice little picture. It's up there.
I'm with you too, because like even this weekend, like I'm watching the CUSE Ohio football game, and it's like the Ohio white jerseys with the green stripes, and like very simple, but you right away it's like, oh, they're playing Ohio. All right, we got to get to some David Herman questions here. He gave me some notes here, and then we'll wrap it up. This has been awesome having you guys on here. I mean, the Bobcat fans are gonna be loving this one. The old CSCHL fans are gonna be loving this one. Herm said, this is right straight from the mouth of David Herman. He says, walking up Jeff Hill. Who wants to take this one? Who wants to talk about Jeff Hill?
I can go. I didn't live there. I know Wells actually lived it, so he had to do it a lot more. But I remember Jeff Hill because Gianni Evangelisti, he's the only other one on the team my freshman year that was from Columbus. So I kind of talked to him a lot. I remember during my first couple weeks there, he made us run it a lot. Walking it every day, brutal. But then, like, when I had to go run that thing too, it was just, it's so tough. And I'm glad I never lived on that side of campus, and I kind of did that on purpose so I wouldn't have to do that hill. But yeah, I know Wells actually had to deal with it for a year.
I live down there, steepest hill you'll ever see in your life. It's one of those hills where when you're driving up it, you're like, you're feeling like you're about to fall backwards. I would do everything in my power to avoid it. I mean, sometimes you can't, but luckily I never had to deal with the workouts there. But definitely, you know, one of the most brutal hills I've ever seen. Might go down as like one of the most brutal on any college campus, to be honest.
All right, follow up. What's this I hear about Sunday baseball?
Oh, that's wiffle ball. One of our fun traditions. It's a big apartment complex. Like, OU's such an old town. It's usually just a bunch of old houses, and that's pretty much where everyone lives. And there's this one complex called Palmer Place. 3 stories, nice apartments. And on Sundays, we'd play wiffle ball. You know, you play at like 11. It's a good, like, get everyone out of bed after maybe a long Saturday night. The one stipulation of the game is when you hit, you have to have some type of drink in your hand. It can be whatever you want. It can have a water bottle in your hand if you want, but play one-handed the whole time, and like you get pretty into it. And then Sunday right before football, there's a bunch of guys being loud, playing music, whatever. So we'll end up, like, by the end of it, getting fans that will come up and sit on their balconies in this big apartment complex and kind of just like watch, and they cheer along or whatever. Maybe they're just making fun of us, who knows? But it's always a great time. Like, anytime you can do that, the boys get so fired up about it.
Wellesley, I'm guessing that bleeds right into NFL Sunday on Court Street.
Absolutely. Honestly, looking back on it, some of my best memories come on Sunday. The boys have a few traditions. My personal favorite, I'll just walk you through like an ideal Sunday really quick. You know, whether it starts with wiffle ball or not, you know, you get you know, so the games are starting at 1. You want to get to Stevens at about 11:30, maybe. Really cheap champagne. You buy bottles of champagne. They'd give us orange juice with it. Kind of just get down what you can, trying to wash away the Saturday night. You're there for the 1 o'clock games. You know, we had a fun little game we played where the football's out. Whoever's holding the football, you're it, basically. You got to knock the football out of their hands, recover the fumble. If you lose the ball, whoever recovers the fumble, the guy who had it has to buy you a shot. So that was a fun game we played. Spin the Ice was another classic one. That one was when it got a little later in the day and you wanted to get more active, but halftime shots at Stevens were always fun. Court Street was like a playground at that point. Like, because, you know, most students, you get to go out, you know, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So no one really has enough for Sunday. But we did, obviously. I think sometimes we use that to our advantage. Like I said, some of my best memories come from Sunday.
That's perfect, right? We're leading into week one of the NFL here pretty soon. And that I think that's a perfect way to kind of wind down this episode here. But like I said, Bobcat fans are really going to like this one. And I'm sure Herm will love going through and editing. Didn't know if we had any behind the scenes David Herman stories from your early days at OU. Wellesley, I'll throw it back over to you.
Well, one, just the nicest guy I've ever met. I'll pump his tires a little bit at the start. Like, on a real, he always just one of the nicest people, always trying to help out. He was always there for us, always trying to make us happy, you know, do what he can to really promote us. I mean, I guess a good story about him is I have a screenshot because it was sick. We were on a roll at the start of the year. And, you know, like I said, always trying to do stuff for us. He somehow knew the person that was working Barstool OH. Ended up getting us, throwing us on there, literally changed the name to like Bobcat Barstool, like hashtag hockey school. Like that was pretty cool. He did that for us. Like, especially as a freshman too, because I was like, oh, this is sick. Like everyone's got to be loving this right now. Like we're such a big deal. Like just thinking this is like the best thing in the world.
Always moving things behind the scenes for the boys. Turner, is there anything that sticks out to you? Maybe an early memory of Herm?
One of the times I knew like he was just like, you know, like one of the best guys is like we were in Chicago playing RMU and it was like right when the Michigan was starting to get big and Harks and I were like trying to just work on stick tricks and like do the Michigan and all these like other little small things around the Michigan and stuff. We stay on the ice for like 45 minutes after like everyone else is gone and Herm stays out there the whole time and like takes pictures of us the whole time and just like sends us the best ones after. And it just, you know, you can tell how like dedicated he is. So that was a great, like my first impression kind of deal. But the other, I think just another good testament to Herm is like anytime he'd be at a game, no matter what it was, if it was Nationals or whatever, anyone that played on that team freshman year that saw Herm would like stop what they're doing in warmups and go up and say hi. And I mean, for us, it started with like 20 guys would go up and say hi and then like 15 would, and then get down to like 7. And then this year it was just me, Sack, and Wells would go up and be like, "Hey, Herm, what's up?" Like, I think that was kind of funny for us to see that just like he still got that support after all those years.
Oh, it was so awesome, like seeing him in his natural habitat at Bird when we went back last year. And he would never admit it, but he was so pissed on Friday night. He didn't think the crowd had enough pop in it. And then sure enough, Saturday, like Wellesley said, it was the headliner of Dad's weekend and that place was jumping. We appreciate you guys sticking around. Turner, I just EP'd again. Want to wish you a happy birthday. I know Wellesley mentioned that earlier in the show too. So again, hope you boys can get settled in the real world like the rest of us. And again, thanks for joining us and hope you guys had some fun recapping some of your favorite OU moments.
Yeah, appreciate it. It was a great time. It was fun to recap.
Yeah, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Once again, thank you to Wellesley and Turner for jumping on the pod this week. Towards the end of that, when I was asking Wellesley about Sunday in Court Street, I thought he was going to just start crying. I thought we had him on the ropes there. I thought maybe he was going to break down because, I mean, he was inspiring me just hearing about what they would do on a Sunday afternoon in Athens. Got plenty of games to watch this week. We'll start things off Friday night in Lynchburg as Liberty takes on M2 UNC. So UNC, they get swept by South Carolina. Now they got to make the trip to Virginia to take on Liberty. Liberty, the last couple of years, it's almost been a tradition that they play NC State in their first home game of the season. They will switch things up in a matchup against UNC. Can the Tar Heels pull off the upset? It'll also be homecoming weekend for Liberty, who will celebrate 40 seasons of hockey on campus. They'll have another ACHA M2 exhibition down the road next weekend when they take on Florida Gulf Coast.
I gotta say, UNC can pull off the upset. By the end of the season, through the transitive property of sports, you could claim that South Carolina is the best team in all of ACHA and AAU.
For that reason, we'll have to make sure we keep an eye on ESPN Plus Friday night. Saturday, we got University of Mary taking on Iowa State. Can the Cyclones kick off the season with a strong start out in North Dakota? And then Friday night, we have Maryville taking on Missouri State. We also have a little ACHA versus ACA matchup as Briarcrest College takes on Jamestown at Barkman Arena. We also have Baylor taking on TCU in M2 action. And then we also have Weber State taking on Utah State out west. I mentioned we had a couple Western games. Friday night, though, in M3, Purdue takes on Notre Dame. Notre Dame looking for some off-ice redemption. I mean, we talked about it. NIU taking down Notre Dame. The vibes on that campus got to be low. The M3 hockey team looking to lift up some spirits there. AAU D2 action. UCF takes on Miami. Miami coming off their D3 national championship. They'll move things up to D2 this year, taking on UCF to open up the season. We also have some AAU D1 action. South Carolina hosts Georgia. SEC hockey, baby. We got a taste of it last weekend with Oklahoma and Arkansas going toe-to-toe, and they gave us a thriller. I'm sure South Carolina and Georgia will do the same. Saginaw Valley State takes on Davenport in their first game at the ACHA M1 level. Lehigh takes on Kutztown in an exhibition between ACHA M1 and AAU D2. Lehigh, another big preseason schedule. I was looking at this graphic the other day. They're going to play Kutztown, Millersville, St. Joseph's, the New Jersey Bears, and the New Jersey Renegades. So five different teams playing exhibitions against Lehigh. They want to, you know, go for the repeat in the ECHA this year, and they're going to have to do it with a big preseason load. Friday night, though, NAU, they're going to debut those new jerseys on Hockey Fights Cancer Night. They take on Park University Gilbert, who played M2 last year in their first season. Now they're moving down to M3. They'll take on NAU on opening night. And then we have Ole Miss AAU D2 taking on Washington University St. Louis, an M3 team. So a little AAU ACHA action to round out the week. And that brings us to our game of the week. West Virginia University taking on the University of Pittsburgh Sunday, the 15th at Westbanco Arena. It is the backyard brawl on ice. This one is one that we circled a while back as soon as it was announced. We love these rivalry games in big arenas. Pitt, West Virginia going toe-to-toe at the home of the Wheeling Nailers. This is going to be a fun one for all tuning in. Expect there to be a pretty big crowd here. Both schools are of similar distance. The rink isn't necessarily between those two schools, but they're both like 35 to 45 minutes away from the rink. So should be an exciting one here. Do we have anyone who wants to give the first pick of the year? Because we didn't give picks last week. Fitzy, I'll throw it over to you. You maybe have a statement about last week's game of the week first.
I'll come clean since we didn't pick. I don't think this will count against my record in the grand scheme of things, but I did go with the Tar Heels last week. Tar Heels, it's my team this year, so we're going to bounce back. Yeah, looking at the backyard brawl on ice. Country roads, take me home. Give me Pittsburgh. The Panthers are going to get it done. I think it'll be a fun one, but you'd expect nothing less from the backyard brawl on ice. So yeah, the Pitt's going to get it done.
Herm, over to you. Pick number two.
It is well known that last season, potentially, I might have had a little bit of beef with a certain program. Maybe there was a box of tissues involved. Who knows? I'd like to bury the hatchet. I'm going Pitt all the way.
I mean, at the start of the show, I think I was very critical of my experience at Fenway Park. We left before the eighth inning, so I missed Sweet Caroline. I think it's very fitting based on my experience at the Red Sox this past weekend, and I didn't enjoy it. It's only right that I pick against Sweet Caroline, and I know they love that song at Pitt, but I'm going to rally around the boys at West Virginia. I think they're ready to go. I think maybe Pitt has the tougher schedule. I'm thinking that the boys at West Virginia, this might be the biggest game of the season for them on opening night. I think they're going to come out firing. I think it's going to be a big crowd. They're going with our state versus their neighborhood, the city of Pittsburgh versus the state of West Virginia, and I'm rolling with the state of West Virginia. What about you, Collins?
I am going to be rocking with Pitt. I don't think Country Roads belongs to West Virginia as well. It is a song about Western, Virginia, and was written actually about a road in Maryland. It has nothing to do with the state of West Virginia. Just saying, that's what John Denver said, not me.
Damn, be a real shame if that was used in a West Virginia hype video this week. Real shame. I'm just kidding, boys. I'm going with a new mindset this year. I'm going to try to pick with my gut a little bit more, because I think there's nothing worse than when you don't go with your gut and you lose. At least if you can go with your gut, you can feel good about it afterwards. So game of the week should be a good one. Backyard brawl brings us to the question of the week. I was thinking about this the other night and we want to know, or actually there's something that sparked this question and I'll kind of reveal it afterwards. But I want to know, is there something where you guys can walk into a hockey rink and see something that a hockey player does that maybe instantly gains your respect? Fitzy, I know you're a guy, play the game the right way. Is there anything you can lead things off? But maybe the example I gave is my high school hockey coach used to always tell us to pick up the puck. You're not kissing up to the refs, but you just do that little thing of giving them the puck after the game. Maybe when you're giving them a little stick work, they're going to think, hey, that's the guy who handed me the puck after that icing. I didn't have to bend down and get that one. And so I always take note of guys when they do that. And I was curious what you guys were thinking. Fitzy, is there anything that comes to mind when you see a player do something? You're like, hey, you know, that guy gets it.
I have a kind of a weird one because it starts off the ice and it's more for like an away trip when you're busing somewhere. You get there, you get to the destination and it's time to unload the bus and the guys, you know, kind of just disappear and don't want to help unload. I think it was like pretty cool when you'd see someone that was, you know, had been playing in the league for however many years or like a fifth year senior, you know, coming and helping grab everything off the bus and make sure that everything's set up. So I don't know if that counts, but I always had respect for guys that did that.
No, that's like right up the alley what I was looking for. Again, just a little thing where you see it, you notice a guy doing that and you're like, that's a good guy right there doing that. Collins, what's something maybe that you've seen at a rink before?
I'm probably going to go with one that, I mean, you can't really see unless you're playing the game. And the way I was phrasing it in my mind was like a real like Philip Rivers kind of guy. Takes a hit, you know, great hit, you know, goalie makes a save, great save, just real respectful guy, not there to talk trash or chirp, but, you know, really lets his play do the talking and is just a respectable stand-up guy and is somebody that you enjoy playing against, I guess.
Herm, you've worked in hockey for a while now, so I'm sure you've seen your fair share of maybe, like Fitz, you were saying, like aren't helping unload the bus and maybe think they're bigger than everything. Like, I'm curious from an operations standpoint, either from your time at Ohio or your time in Utica, like what is something that you've maybe noticed as an operations person? What's something that you've seen a player do that you instantly gain their respect for?
I'm going to say generous with their time. I would say some guys are kind of content to play and practice and then kind of head home and keep things quiet throughout the day. The individuals that are really willing to get up there within the community, whether it's outreach or fans or like genuinely building relationships, I think that always stands out to me.
I mean, those are all great answers. Now I feel like mine answer is a little bit different than everybody else's. Again, the example I had was pick up the puck. That was something that, you know, I was taught at a young age, so I always do that. But I thought of something, and I actually think that I may have been guilty of this before, so this could be pretty hypocritical. But I was watching the highlights from Bama Auburn, and the Bama kid scores this unbelievable goal, and his teammate like is right there to hug him after the goal. And I swear the Bama kid like bodies his teammate so that he can go to center ice and do like the big celly. And I always think it looks silly because it's kind of like showing up your teammate, but like the celly just looks way less cool when it's like that. And now I'm thinking back to like my own overtime celebration. I'm like, I think I might have blown by teammates in the moment. The reverse of that, I think the coolest thing and one of the coolest celebrations you can do is when somebody gives you a nice pass and you just immediately point to them after the goal. That is one of my all-time favorite hockey celebrations. I love seeing when it happens in the NHL because it's just like a, you know, like I didn't do a lot of work. I just finished the play there and a little acknowledgement to the guy who got you the puck. Fitzy, you loved the finger point celly when you were in Binghamton. I saw it a couple times.
It's classic. Yeah, you got to acknowledge. I'm just thinking of it. I won't call him out, but we scored an overtime when I got back to Binghamton last season. I made the whole play happen and he skates right on by me.
Yeah, so we're going to have to check the tape on my overtime goal against Buffalo because I may or may not have pushed a couple teammates aside for the big celly. But looking back on it, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Fitz, you would know this. Another pro move is when you win a game in overtime and your goalie has bailed you out. As a defenseman, you go to the goalie first. And if you watch now, like like some of these like playoff games that end in overtime, you'll always see a couple defensemen go to the goalie first, and then you go join the rest of the team. It's a vet move right there. I saved these for the end here. 611 thoughts here. Just some wanted to pick your brain about a couple things before we wrap it up here. But the North Carolina Tar Heels Ice Hockey Booster Club announced a $25 million capital campaign to construct a 3,000-seat multi-use ice hockey arena in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. We'd heard that the land had been purchased, and that was an official announcement. Renderings from the arena came out, but now it's definitely not official, but the ball is starting to roll. And I think especially, and again, I could be oblivious to this, but I feel like at an institution like UNC Chapel Hill, like $25 million. I mean, that's a couple of donors, right? Like a couple of big donors who maybe like hockey, and then all of a sudden this arena is being built. So I'm very curious, Herm, I'll throw it over to you first, what your take is. But like in my mind, I think this either happens by 2030 or it doesn't happen at all. That's kind of how I'm thinking about this.
I think it's more on the Penn State side than the Illinois side. I definitely see this happening.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see where this goes next, because it seems like they're picking up some momentum.
I think the fact that they say it's going to be multi-use, I mean, that can always help kind of push things faster, because it's like, well, it's not just for, you know, the hockey team. It can be used for local community stuff and whatever else.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the last thing I wanted to mention too is, you know, what's next for Ohio hockey? Because we had talked about, you know, Leo Marone stepping down as head coach and what was going to be next. And it seems like they have found that next thing, and it's going to be head coach Barry Schutte taking over for the program. Herm, I wanted to maybe bait the Bobcats fans listening to this episode into sticking around for the end here, but this seems like a huge hire, a very qualified candidate. I think his only red flag is that he has worn red before. He comes from Miami, which is a very big rivalry at OU. And so I'm curious maybe what your take on that. Are people in Athens going to look past his red?
I think without a doubt, his pedigree, not only as a player at the NCAA D1 level and then coaching for the past 25 plus years across Miami of Ohio at the ACHA 2 level, at Bowling Green, at Miami of Ohio, at the NCAA D1 level. I'm really, really excited about this. I think this is an awesome opportunity for Schutte. I think this is a great hire for the program. I hope they can continue the recruiting pedigree that Leo had really turned them around with over the past couple of years. I'm excited about this hire. For sure.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a perfect place to end. Again, we got a lot of hockey on tap for this weekend. A lot of teams opening up the season for the first time. As always, our DMs are open. If there's anything crazy happening in a game and you want us to tune in, we'll be right there. Shoot us a DM, maybe a link to a YouTube live stream. Love keeping tabs on everything that's going on. Again, we appreciate you guys for tuning in. We hope to see you in a couple weeks here with more ACHA and AAU college hockey news.
See you, boys. Yeah.